Welcome to This Conversation. I'm your host, Teresa Keller, and my guest today is Virginia Delegate Sam Rasool. He represents the 38th District in the Virginia Legislative Territory, centered in Roanoke, and he can correct me if I'm wrong on that, and also I think reaches up to Fairfax County. He grew up in Ohio, went to Roanoke College, and is one of two Muslims in the Virginia State House. I must say, Sam, that I can't imagine being introduced by my religious affiliation. Here is Teresa Keller. She's a member of the Presbyterian Church. But your Muslim connection is part of why I'm interviewing you today. I'm doing several interviews with different perspectives on the Israel-Gaza war. I interviewed a Jewish man from Washington County, an Episcopalian priest who spent some time in Gaza. You, and I hope to do more. So thank you very much, Virginia Delegate Sam Rasool, for being with me.
Thank you, Teresa, so much for having me.
What did I get wrong in that?
Fortunate enough to be in the legislature, and we impact all of Virginia and the state legislature. My specific district is in the Roanoke Valley, where I've grown up my whole life. After we came here when I was three from Ohio, and with my wife and three kids, we've loved living here in Western Virginia.
Well, I have lots of questions for you, but I'm going to start with a broad question. Again, the topic is the Israel-Gaza war. What do you see when you look at what's going on there now?
What we see right now is a genocide of a people. The reality is that the whole world has come together and said, this is terrible to be watching what is happening right now. Where we've seen it play out in international courts. Even today, I think that The Hague is bringing up war crime charges. But the sheer humanity around going in and destroying nearly 80% of the homes, killing over 15,000 children have been murdered, over 40,000 people. And the final straw, as we speak right now, Israel forcing another 500,000 people to flee, the only remaining city that's not in ruins in the Gaza Strip, as they are determined to complete this genocide. So it's what's particularly heinous about this point in history is this is the first time where we are watching a genocide play out minute by minute in front of us, and even that much more terrible is that we are funding it as Virginia taxpayers, as American taxpayers, to be funding this. So it's certainly going to be a unique and terrible stain on our collective humanity and history.
U.S. policy says, and many people would say the same thing, what happened when Hamas attacked, invaded Israel and killed over 1,000 people and took hostages, that the policy has been, that many people have said, well, Israel has a right to defend itself and it has a right to go after Hamas. What do you say to that?
So what's very interesting about this question, first, to who's supporting Hamas to begin with? We see Netanyahu has publicly stated for years that he has wanted to support and continues to support Hamas over the years for the sole purpose of making the region unstable. And that would be, I think, a point that people would be confused about. Just simply Google it, and it's a very public point to create division, to create this kind of hysteria, number one. Number two, clearly, any civilian lives that are lost is terrible. And so to utilize one to justify the genocide of another is a terrible rationalization. And then number three, I mean, looking to what's happening as we speak, I mean, senior government officials have made it clear this is not really about Hamas. They want to ethnically cleanse the region, wipe it away to build settlements there. And so there is a perverse force at play here where senior government officials have made it clear. And then, of course, with the use of 2,000-pound bombs all throughout this region. They're not interested in going after or defeating Hamas. They are interested in a genocide, an ethnic cleansing, fundamentally because they believe that these people are lesser beings. And that's what's allowed for a system of 76 years of apartheid and oppression by this regime. And that's what's given rise to this current genocide.
You know, Mr. Rasool, I have been confused, and I imagine others are. Maybe you can clarify for us, what does it mean when we talk about the occupied territories of Gaza and the West Bank? What does that mean that they're occupied?
Currently, Israel controls everything that comes in or out, really has dominance over these territories that are the West Bank and Gaza. So they are occupied by the state of Israel. And so nothing really happens. And of course, Gaza has been under siege for 17 years. In other words, there's been a total naval blockade, a counting of calories of food that's coming in and out of the Gaza Strip. These are well documented by Amnesty International, by the United Nations, by countless organizations. And so here you have 76 years ago, people who were living on the land and were expunged and ethnically cleansed, 750,000 people kicked off of their land for the purpose of establishing the state of Israel. 75% of the families that were in and have been in Gaza, those individuals are refugees from this ethnic cleansing that happened with the initial establishment 76 years ago. And so here you have people who are refugees, millions of them all around the region because of this expungement. And so that's what it means to be occupied. They have no effective control over this region.
Israel was established because of the horrific discrimination, more than discrimination against Jews, and 7 million Jews killed, and Jews being run out of their homes all over the world and not having a place to settle. And so Israel was put down in the middle of Palestinian territory. I hope that that's factually accurate. And is it not true that at that time the Palestinians accepted Israel?
That is not true. I'm not exactly sure how we get to that kind of conclusion, but it's very well documented, of course, that because it was 2 years of war from 1947 to 1949, where they were these militias were coming in and ethnically cleansing 750,000 people off of their land, erasing their footprint in over 500 cities and towns, killing tens of thousands in their war. So there was never any acceptance by the Palestinians. And of course, I'm not sure who would accept. I don't think you, Teresa, or anybody here in Southwest Virginia otherwise would say, hey, please come take my land and my house. I don't know why I want it right now. That doesn't make any logical sense.
And so we have a situation where there's been tension. I guess it's fair to say hatred on both sides, from Israel to the Palestinians and from the Palestinians to Israel. Delegate Rasool, what is your family history? I know that the Jewish man I interviewed says, and I think this is easily understood, is that Jews feel a connection to Israel, even though they've never been there, never lived there, never intend to go there. What is your family history and your connection to Palestinian territories?
You know, what's been beautiful to watch about the protests and individuals who have been rising up against this genocide is that it's being led by Jewish, Muslim, Christian people from all walks of life who reject this type of hatred. And what's interesting is that on the Palestinian side, you know, Palestinians are Christian, Muslims, and Jews. This is not a religious struggle on the Palestinian side. It is fundamentally a struggle for the ethnic cleansing of people off of a land, off of the land that they have been on for centuries. And so I think it's important for us to kind of understand the difference between a Zionist mentality where we have the right to be able to come in and ethnically cleanse this land and kick these people who are less than us off of this land, and the right for people to want to be able to say, we have the ability to say, no, not to, you cannot take our land. You should not be able to treat us as subhuman, violating international law, now committing genocide. And so my parents came here after the 1967 war, as a region that's been plagued by war for so long.
What was your family doing there before the 1967 war? And you might just want to give a little context about what the 67 war was and the result of that.
My family, you know, there are two sides to the family, and they were just general small business people and agricultural people, just who were living on in the West Bank. And after the 67 war was another conflict that had arisen because there had been a lot of aggression. And after that war, my parents and their family decided that they, you know, needed to seek a better life. And fortunately, you know, this our great country, the United States, has given us for many decades a safe refuge.
I guess back to the question that I was leading into is that 1967 is recent in my world and my history. I suppose you feel a strong connection to people living in the West Bank.
You know, I'm Palestinian American, and this is my heritage, and certainly there's a connection there. I will tell you, certainly after the genocide began, I've learned so much more about the massive violations of international law, the ethnic cleansing that has been happening, the terrible atrocities that are happening as we speak, not only in Gaza, but in the West Bank, where hundreds of people have been executed, are being terrorized day to day at this moment, even in the West Bank, beyond the Gaza Strip. And so I think anybody, you know, you, Teresa, if you were hearing that people you had a close connection to in Southwest Virginia were being terrorized and being oppressed, certainly it's a very sad moment for many people around the world.
Delegate Rasul, I want to ask you a little bit more personal kinds of questions, but you have something in common with Jewish people in that you're a minority and that you are minorities that have both seen enormous discrimination. I mean, in this country, you've witnessed a call for a ban on Muslims entering the country. What does that do to you as a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we have seen a rise in hatred and nationalism. We certainly have to, all of us collectively, be pushing back against that type of hatred. We are a country that was formed because, in part, people were fleeing religious persecution in Europe. And so we celebrate, in fact, Virginia is the birthplace of American religious freedom, where we can live freely based on not only our religion, but based on who we are, and build a, you know, a beautiful republic. And so any threats to that certainly is sad for all of us.
Well, speaking of threats, some people have been reluctant and even did not want to be interviewed for this discussion, for this topic. And in your case, you are so high profile, one of two Muslims in the state legislature. You ran for office in Southwest Virginia, basically. What kind of experience have you had, and have you had fear or unease in being Muslim and in running for office?
Yeah, great question. I have had just a beautiful upbringing in Southwest Virginia. I you know, grew up going to Baptist churches, Church of the Brethren, as a Muslim, but very much with parents of an ecumenical mindset, having, you know, friends of every major world religion, and so I've very much felt at home, feel safe. You know, certainly we all are operating with a high alertness in different ways. I'm thankful that, you know, when it comes down to it, a lot of us share the same wants and needs. We want to feel safe. We want a better future for our children than we had. We want to be able to put food on the table. And so when we're talking about billions and billions of our tax dollars going abroad to fund a genocide, and we have so many things that we need to focus on here, you can find a lot of common ground with folks who are wanting to ensure that, you know, we're taking care of our own and not having to be beholden to some foreign genocide.
One more question on more of a personal note, but when I talked to Kenny Schumann, the Jewish man that I interviewed, and talked to him about growing up as Jewish in Southwest Virginia, and he talked about the constant reminders that you're different. And one of those was just an example of you go to the football game or you go to school, and the prayers are almost always Christian prayers. How did that affect you? And were there other things that made you feel different?
Yeah, I think if you want to feel singled out, there's lots of ways to feel it. And I would make the distinction between, you know, being actively singled out and passively singled out. You know, every day at the House of Delegates, we have a morning, we have a prayer at the beginning of session. And I have chosen to stay there for that prayer. And 99% of them are Christian prayers. It's a time for reflection. We can all speak to God as a spiritual person. And I don't feel singled out. I feel as though it's a time that I can have a moment of togetherness in reflection with people who are on that floor from all walks of life. So I choose not to take that approach. However, there is, when you're actively singled out, if someone is calling you out based on your race, religion, whatever it may be, that kind of hatred has no place here. And we should certainly push back against that. Generally speaking, I didn't experience a lot of that. I did experience some, but not a lot of that growing up, nor living here. And I think it's in part a matter of perspective.
All right, let's turn back to more of the current national issues. And one of those is the student protests. And students, to my way of interpreting it, have reacted to what they've seen in Gaza of civilians being killed, starved, the failure of Israel to let aid in. However, these protesters have often been labeled as radical. They've been described as violent and as anti-Semitic. What do you see in those student protesters? And specifically, do you see anti-Semitism or do you see anti-Israel?
Certainly, there are a lot of different voices in here. What I have seen is specifically in Virginia, I've visited Virginia Tech protests and many others, is a whole generation waking up and saying, how did we as a society get to the point where we could so blatantly support a genocide playing out minute by minute in front of our eyes and then have the audacity to greenlight tens of billions of dollars to further fund it? This is so illogical and is so out of whack to the average 20-year-old. They don't understand how the average 60-year-old got there. And if you were to wipe the slate clean and begin to analyze this and say, man, here you have this oppressive regime that has been oppressing these individuals for 76 years, has been gradually ethnically cleansing, continuing to steal land from underneath people, and then to expect people to just welcome that kind of oppression. And on top of that, our government funding that as the United States, I can see why there is such a passion for in these protests. I will tell you, every protest I have went to, there are Jewish voices there. There are prominent Jewish voices there who are front and center. And so I'm sure that they, if there was anti-Semitic fervor there, that they probably wouldn't feel welcome. But what you have is it's not anti-Semitism. It's a pushback against this concept of Zionism that believes that the establishment of the state of Israel can happen with impunity, that they have the right to do whatever they want, whenever they want to, and violate international law, basic human rights, and commit a genocide in doing so. And that's why so many of our Jewish brothers and sisters have stood up and said, not in our name. When we said never again to a genocide that was the Holocaust, that horrific time in our history, that means never again for anyone. And we've been so proud at every single one of these events to see Jewish voices front and center.
This conflict that we're seeing in Israel and Gaza in some ways is the current version of a disagreement, a challenge, a difficulty between Jews and Muslims that goes back thousands of years. We only can look at the situation now, but what is the solution here?
That's fundamentally not true. I reject the premise of your question. That in that land for hundreds and hundreds of years prior, there was no conflict between those of different religions. Go back to 1300, 1400, 1500. Christians, Muslims, Jews lived on that land. Indigenous people lived on that land for many, many generations and centuries. Certainly going back to the time of the Crusades 1,000 years ago, you could look at that religious-based conflict. But there was no religious-based conflict that was large-scale conflict, 100 years ago, 120 years ago. It didn't exist. People from walks of life, different religions, lived there in harmony and got along just fine as Christian, Muslim, and Jewish Palestinians of the region. And then a new movement came in called Zionism, which was birthed in the late 1800s, that said, we are going to do everything that we can to establish a homeland at whatever cost. And we are seeing that play out right now. We need to reject the narrative that this is a religious-based conflict, that Muslims see this as an attack against them. This is an attack against people who are indigenous to the land, and this land is being taken away from them. If one group of people believes that it is their religious calling to do so, then that is on them. But that is not where Palestinian Muslim and Christians in particular, who have been very active here in the United States in these protests, see this.
I appreciate those comments. I really was thinking of the Crusades, and I guess people can do their own research and look into that a little bit more. But again, what is the solution now?
The solution is that we, as a human race, we fundamentally stand up and say we are for basic human rights. We reject the notion that any entity should be acting with impunity. We as Americans say we will not be spending tens of billions of our own tax dollars to fund a genocide while we have millions of children living well below the poverty line, veterans who need support in many different ways, mental health challenges. We can choose to make these policy decisions, invest in a future that works for all of us, and believe that this is fundamentally, not a religious-based conflict. This is an entity, a movement that does not represent all of Judaism. It represents a nationalistic, ethnocentric group that believes that there is that this entity should be dominated by one religious ethnocentric group. It is not a democracy. And say this is fundamentally not what the United States stands for.
Delegate Rasul, with all respect, that's a tall order, because the U.S. policy, the United States has vetoed resolutions in the United Nations when everybody agrees to try to hold Israel responsible in some way, and the U.S. vetoes it. What do you think it would take for that change of attitude in this country?
Well, I am so touched by so many of my awesome Jewish friends who are leaders. We just had in the past couple of days a Biden appointee who is Jewish resign, saying that we do not believe in the policies of the United States with regards to the genocide happening in Gaza. And so many of our brave Jewish and Christian friends have decided to amplify their voice. And these are the people who we will look back in history and say that they helped to move the needle. We clearly see that public opinion is shifting for the first time. Not only do the majority of Americans want to see a ceasefire, and it's not happening, but the majority of Democrats believe this is a genocide, not just a ceasefire, but it is in fact a genocide that is happening. So the truth is coming out about the terrible human rights violations. And we hope that in years to come, we'll continue to try to hold all parties accountable.
I'm sure I speak for my listeners when I say how grateful I am to you for sharing your thoughts with us. Very quickly, what is your future in politics? You're a Virginia delegate. Do you aspire to statewide office or something more?
Well, I've run for higher office before and enjoyed it and love being able to go around the Commonwealth. And certainly we have ambitions. I've never let my ambitions get in the way of me trying to fight for what's right, whether it's been pushing back against the Mountain Valley Pipeline and the stealing of private land for the wealth of a few, whether it's standing up against the utilities who have been fleecing and taking advantage of folks, whether that the AEP or Dominion, standing up for people from all walks of life who have been treated unfairly. For now, you know, my calling is to try to be on the right side of history. Sometimes that can, you know, put you in more difficult situations with regards to aspiring for future office. But what we can do is look back and say, you know what, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, he was not very popular in this country. And now we quote him every day. And so the lesson from that is be sure that we all do our best to stand on the right side of history.
My guest today, Virginia Delegate Sam Rasool. Thank you once again very much, Delegate Rasool. And we appreciate your letting us get to know you better today.
Thank you so much for having me, Teresa.
You're listening to this conversation on WEHC. You can hear us Wednesdays at 6 and Sundays at 2. You can find replays of these interviews on our podcast site. All you have to do is say WEHC podcast, this conversation. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you once again, Delegate Rasool.